The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no fuller on earth could bleach them. Then Elijah appeared to them along with Moses, and they were conversing with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus in reply, "Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He hardly knew what to say. They were so terrified. Then a cloud came, casting a shadow over them. From the cloud came a voice, "This is my beloved son. Listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus alone with them. As they were coming down from the mountain, he charged them not to relate what they had seen to anyone, except when the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what rising from the dead meant. The Gospel of the Lord. The story of the transfiguration of Jesus has charmed and dazzled Christian poets, artists, preachers, and mystics for centuries. In many churches and cathedrals around the world, there are surpassing beautiful depictions of the transfiguration in stained glasses. In many books and articles, there is a preoccupation with the meaning of this event. And so that brings to mind the question, what is it about the transfiguration that fascinates the Christian mind? We are fascinated by the story I read in the Gospel today because it is the most explicit mention of the mystical experience in the New Testament. Whether we like it or not, we are a people of mystics. If you scratch at the surface of people's lives, there are lots of stories of the mystical. Individuals have it, societies have it, nations have it. And so, but what is the mystical? What is mystical experience? Mystical experience is the experience of spiritual things within the ordinary. It is that experience that finally convinces you as an individual that the spiritual or spiritual realm or spiritual reality is far more beautiful, far more greater than ordinary experience. It is the experience of, aha, now I get it. What happened on the mountain, the story I read, is not a miracle. Jesus did not take them to the mountain to show a miracle. It is a theophany. God is revealing himself to human beings. The gospel tells us that at the midpoint of Jesus' ministry, he took three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, up to the mountain. And on the mountain, they had a mystical experience. He took them to a mountain. You know, the symbolism of mountain is very significant. Even a casual reader of the Bible will be very familiar with the symbolism of the mountain. Where did Moses first encounter God when God was sending him on a message to go to Egypt and liberate his people, Israelites? Where did that event take place? On a mountain, Mount Sinai. That's where Moses saw the burning bush. Where did Moses receive the Ten Commandments? Again, on the mountain, the same Mount Sinai. Where did Elijah encounter God? On the mountain, Mount Horeb, which is another name for Sinai. In the first reading, we read that Abraham took his son Isaac to sacrifice him to the Lord. Where did that event take place? Again, on a mountain, Mount Moriah. Where is the temple in Jerusalem built? Again, it is built on a mountain, Mount Zion. Jesus oftentimes goes to the mountain to pray. Search the scriptures. A lot of encounters with God happens on a mountain. That is why a lot of mystics use heights or mountains in a metaphorical sense to speak about the transcendence, heightened consciousness, heightened awareness, the vision from the hilltop, which is Thomas Aquinas' definition of wisdom. He defines wisdom as the vision from the hilltop. Being on a mountaintop is seeing things on a broader perspective. It's like seeing all of reality from the standpoint of God. When you are on the mountaintop, you see how all things are connected in and through God. Think about Martin Luther King Jr. the night before he was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. In his speech, he said, "I have been to the mountaintop." He was speaking figuratively. He didn't climb any. I've lived in Memphis for 4 years. I spent 4 years there. There's no mountain. But Martin Luther King was speaking metaphorically that he has had this experience that no one else has seen. And what he said that he saw at the mountaintop came to pass. He said, "I have been to the mountaintop. I may not be there. I may not get there with you." I think a night or so after he made that speech, he was killed in Memphis. A lot of things happened at the mountain. Jesus took three of his disciples to the mountain. And right there, the gospel said he was transfigured. What is the meaning of that transfigured? Such a big word. The word transfigured is derived from the Greek word metamorpho, which means to change form. Jesus changed from what he was. He changed his form to another form without ceasing to be what he was. He became something more. Through his humanity, the disciples saw his divinity. In the Old Testament, Moses asked God, "Show me your glory." And God said, "No. If I show you my glory, you will not live to tell the story." But on this mountaintop, God showed his glory. That's why you have Moses and Elijah. I don't have time to unpack the transfiguration. You know, when I was preparing this homily, I was saying to myself, I wish this was like a talk. It has a lot to unpack from this story. What Moses requested from God in the Old Testament, when he asked God, "Show me your glory," and God said, "No, you can't see me. If you see me, you will die." Now, in Jesus, God now has a face. He showed his glory to his disciples, three of them. And when Peter saw it, the impetuous one, among all the disciples of Jesus, Peter is the impetuous one. He's the one who is quick to speak, even without thinking. He speaks without thinking. He was so captivated by the experience that he said to Jesus, "Master, this is a beautiful place. It is good that we are here. If you want me, if you permit me, if you command me, I would like to make three tents. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Now, over the years, lots of preachers have criticized Peter, rebuked him for wanting to hang on to an experience that is fleeting, vanishing, and impermanent. They have criticized Peter for wanting to be there. And I have been guilty of that too, but a deeper reading is not really true. Peter had a mystical experience. He had just experienced a theophany. He had seen God. You know, look, Jesus was transfigured. The Bible says that, you know, his figure was so dazzling. It's almost like as snow as white. I mean, as white as snow. It was so beautiful that Peter said to Jesus, "If you want me, we can make three tents." Now, when he said, "Let us make three tents," he wasn't speaking about having little habitations, one for Jesus, one for Moses, one for Elijah. He wasn't talking about building three houses for them to live. And that's where a lot of preachers get this story wrong. If Peter was speaking about building a place for them to stay permanently, he would have asked Jesus, "Let us make six tents," because there are six of them, one for Moses, one for Jesus, one for Elijah, one for Peter, one for James, and one for John. But what he asked was three tents. Three tents. What Peter was simply asking Jesus is that the place where they had a mystical experience, the place where they had a theophany, the place where they had a vision of God, where they saw God in his glory, can become a focus and a locus of worship. And it's not different. Peter's instinct is actually our instinct today. Look at places where there is a mystical experience. Look at Guadalupe. Look at Lourdes. Look at all the places where the Blessed Mother had appeared. Today, we have built churches and cathedrals over there. Not just to remember a distant event, but to worship God who has made that mystical experience possible. And while this was going on, the gospel said, then came a voice. What is the significance of the voice in this event? The voice of the Father that spoke from heaven is a sign of authentic mysticism. It shows us that what happened in this event is not an abstraction. A mystical experience is not an abstraction. It is a contact, an encounter with a person, God, who speaks to the human heart. And what is God saying? In this, when God spoke, he did two things. He witnessed for his son. He testified for him. And now, he now spoke to all of us. He said, listen to him. The call to listen to the son is God's own, using the words of Martin Luther King, is God's own fierce urgency of now. Listen to my son now, not tomorrow, not next year. Listen to him right now. If you want to live, if you want to be peaceful, if you want to experience peace, if you want to be saved, listen to my son. And why should we listen to him? Because the Gospel of John says that on him, in him, God has set his seal. Jesus is God's final and definitive warrior. He has come to fight. He has come to win. And that victory belongs to all of us. And God is saying to him, if you want to win, listen to my son. You see, this gospel too, here you see the divinity of Jesus, you know, being portrayed and being revealed. Listen to him. You know, the Catholic Church, that's one of the things I always say to people, why I love the Catholic Church, is that we have different seasons. This season, the church is calling us to do something. And so, because if we ask ourselves, Jesus is saying, listen, the Father is saying, listen to my son. What is it that the son is likely asking us to do during this season? Here, I'm going to read a few things. This is a season of Lent, and this season, the Father is asking us to listen to his son. And the son is speaking to us, and is asking us to do the following. Fast from judging others, and feast on God who dwells in them. Fast from noticing our differences, and feast on our oneness. Fast from words that pollute, and feast on words that purify. Fast from discontent, feast on gratitude. Fast from deep-seated anger, and feast on God's peace. Fast from pessimism, and feast on hope. Fast from worrying too much, being anxious, and feast on trust and confidence in God. Yes, we have been through a lot since last year. But this season, fast from pessimism and feast on hope. And this hope is not based on what you can do, but it's based on what God can do for you. Fast from guilt and feast on God's forgiveness and mercy. Fast from complaining, and brothers and sisters, feast on appreciation and gratitude for what God has done. Fast from stress and from working without rest. You are not a machine. And feast on self-care. We have to remember that we are created in God's own image. And so, taking care of yourself is appreciating the one who made you. If I buy a gift for you and you trash it, and I realize that you don't appreciate it, I will be hurt. Where do you think we got all of that from? So self-care is not just good for you. It's also an appreciation of the giver, God himself. Fast from violence and hostility and feast on friendship. Fast from bitterness, feast on pardon. Fast from sadness, feast on joy of the Lord that is your strength. Fast from selfishness, feast on compassion for others. Fast from discouragement and feast on moving forward. Fast from religious apathy, feast on attending to the Lord. During the week, I preached here and I talked about what it means to attend to God. Fast from racial suspicion, feast on trust and goodness. Fast from gossip, feast on spreading the good news. There is a lot to talk about God. Let's talk about it. Fast from seeking evil or seeing evil everywhere. Feast on the ever presence of God. When we see evil everywhere, we undermine the reality and the presence of God. God is more powerful than Satan and all his angels. Fast from talking too much, feast on listening. Fast from hate, feast on love, because God is love. Fast from always trying to be in control of your life, trying to be in control of everything, feast on involving others and allowing God to be in control of your life. Fast from sin, because sin hurts, and feast on uprightness. Fast from sinful attachment to worldly goods. Feast on turning back to God, who is our enduring good. Fast from the feeling of unworthiness. I can't come to church because I am unworthy. I can't get close to God because I am unworthy. I can't read in church because I'm unworthy. I cannot become a Eucharistic minister because I'm unworthy. I can't join the choir because I am worthy. I can't volunteer anything in the church because you're unworthy. If that is the standard, I will not be here preaching to you. And none of us should be here. None of us is worthy. So fast from that feeling of unworthiness and feast on the Lord who found you worthy to be in your presence and to minister to him. Fast from pride and arrogance and feast on humility, which is the path of God. Every one of us, if we have time to talk about the time when we had a mystical experience, when we experienced God in a deeper sense, a lot of us here has a story to tell. May today, my prayer is that the mystical experience that Peter, James, and John experienced, the transfiguration story, will once again rekindle, reawaken that experience that we had about God. May that experience drive us, motivate us, inspire us to aspire, so that we don't expire or perspire. Amen.